Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Robert Dreyfus, a Nation contributing editor and an independent investigative journalist who specializes in politics and national security. He's the author of Devil's Game, How the United States Helped Unleash Fundamentalist Islam. And he has an article at Rolling Stone, Russiagate Dominoes Are Starting to Fall. Welcome to Background Briefing, Robert Dreyfus.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
And the New York Times story that reveals exactly what happened when the FBI raided Paul Manafort's home in the early hours of the morning, executing a FISA warrant on behalf of the special counsel, reads like something out of a movie. But there was also another raid as well. A FISA warrant was issued and the FBI executed a raid on Facebook itself to get all of this information about the extent to which Russians had created fake Americans to influence the elections using Facebook's as a vehicle for their active measures. So I take it that there's no other way to look at this except the special prosecutor's on a roll, right? And he's playing hardball.
Well, they've moved things into another gear over the last few weeks, and it did start in July with that raid on Manafort's home in Alexandria, Virginia. What we now know from the New York Times story is that they didn't knock on his door politely and ask if they could come in. This was a pre-dawn raid, and they got a warrant that specifically allowed them to fiddle with the lock to come in secretly. So I guess the first knock that Manafort heard was when they knocked on his bedroom door. They carted away all kinds of documents and electronic devices and boxes full of information. But it seems that they've identified Manafort as one of the weak links on Team Trump, that if they can bring him down, if they can connect him either to money laundering, to other financial and real estate crimes, or to Russia and election tampering, of course, that then he might flip and tell everybody on the Mueller side of the fence what's going on, and they could use him as a way to get to the higher ups, including the main higher up, the higher up in chief, the president.
Yes, and Manafort was, after all, Donald Trump's campaign manager, and was present at that infamous meeting that took place in Trump's Tower in June of 2016, at which Jared Kushner and Donald Trump Jr. met with a whole bunch of Russians, most of whom had well-demonstrated and long-standing connections to Russian intelligence. But it looks as though the CIA was on to Manafort back in 2014, that they were looking into his activities in Ukraine on behalf of Yanukovych, the deposed.
Yeah, well, Manafort had connections into Ukraine and to the pro-Russian politicians, specifically in Ukraine, going back 13 years. Starting in 2004, he was consulting for and doing political work on behalf of Viktor Yanukovych, who was eventually elected president of Ukraine once again back around 2010 or so. And Yanukovych and his cronies were paying Manafort and his consulting firm, Davis Manafort Partners. But we don't know back at that time, 10 years ago, whether the intelligence community was picking up on Manafort just in the course of following the activities of various Ukrainians and Russians out there. But we do know that starting in 2014, just 3 years ago, they sought and won a FISA-ordered court surveillance operation against Manafort, including, I guess, listening to all of his phone communications and emails. That went on for 2 years, and it was suspended last year in 2016, and then it was restarted again last year. It seems from the work that CNN has done in digging into this that it was restarted after the CIA started picking up signs of activity linking Russian officials and business people with people from Team Trump, including Manafort. And so they reinstituted this warrant in 2016, and apparently it continued through this year. In fact, it continued even after Trump was inaugurated as President of the United States, so that theoretically, at least, it could be that the feds have transcripts of phone conversations between Manafort and the President of the United States, which could theoretically implicate either or both of them in talking about cooperation, colluding, coordinating with the Russians during the election campaign. That remains to be seen, but certainly Manafort is in a heap of trouble. And as we know, he's, according to the New York Times, he's been informed after that raid that he is going to be indicted. What he's going to be indicted for, that we don't know, but it certainly means indicted for some kind of criminal activity, which could range from, again, from financial wrongdoing all the way up to treasonous activities.
And again, I'm speaking with Robert Dreyfuss, a Nation contributing editor and independent investigative journalist who specializes in politics and national security. He's the author of Devil's Game, How the United States Helped Unleash Fundamentalist Islam. And he has an article at Rolling Stone, Russiagate Dominoes Are Starting to Fall. And of course, this is a way that federal prosecutors operate. They squeeze the weakest link, the lowest fruit. And it seems like they probably have an awful lot on Manafort, and he could be facing a lot of jail time, so maybe he will squeal. He certainly was fired unceremoniously by Jared Kushner, who gave him, I think, 30 seconds before he had to submit his resignation, and it was apparently quite humiliating for him. But just to touch on the activities that may have gained the attention of the CIA and led to these wiretappings, his businesses, Manafort's businesses with the Russians and with their puppet Yanukovych in Ukraine, and of course the whole Ukraine thing blew up when Viktor Yanukovych was deposed by his own people. Manafort had pocketed about $17 million from Yanukovych before then. But the other person who also pocketed money was who was a partner with Manafort in working on the Ukrainian accounts, on Yanukovych's account, was none other than Tad Devine, who ended up running Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign. So this is a very murky story, is it not?
Well, it's a tangled story, no doubt. Mueller, the special counsel, has the ability to go every which way. Once he's installed as special counsel, his mandate is not unlimited, but it's pretty hard to tell him that he can't follow this or that lead. And I'm sure he'll look into everybody. The Podesta group has some connections to Ukraine as well, and so forth. But I think what he's going to try to do is follow each one of these threads and then see if it can get him closer to and not further away from the main target, which is, did the Trump campaign and its inner circle, his sons, his daughter, his son-in-law, his campaign manager, and some of his other intimates, did they coordinate with the Russians? The fact of the Russian meddling is pretty clearly established. I don't think Mueller has to further elucidate that, although it would be good if either he or the Senate and House committees that are looking into this made some of the intelligence public, if they declassified some of the underlying intelligence so we know what the conclusion of the intelligence community was actually based on. But even short of that, I think Mueller's main job right now is determine whether somebody on the Trump campaign was wittingly or unwittingly involved in helping the Russians, whether it involves the hacking of the Democratic National Committee or Podesta's account, whether it involves the transmitting of that information, the leaking of it, whether it involves using their big data connections to help the Russians target things like Facebook ads and Twitter bots and other communication efforts that were aimed at deliberately, you know, inciting some of the Trump supporters to go out and vote last year. All of this stuff is what Mueller has to look into.
Well, that's why it is such an extraordinary, broad, multifaceted operation, apparently. I'm told that the operation that was ordered by Putin against the advice of some of his more seasoned advisors, like Ivanov, his chief of staff, who he fired because Ivanov didn't go along with it. He was a former KGB general, and Putin was a colonel. There's some buyer's remorse going on there now, but apparently it's cost about $5 billion at least. And I think when you look at the job that Mueller has, the only way to tie all of these threads together is to see it as an intelligence operation, which is what it was.
Well, that's true, although I don't think Mueller has to, you know, get every T crossed and every I dotted. He has to find evidence of, a few important crimes that he can then use to indict Trump-related officials and then hopefully get them to squeal on the boss. And at that point, he can make a recommendation to Congress that Trump be impeached. So, he's not writing the Encyclopedia Britannica about the scope and breadth and depth of this Russian investigation, although that would be nice to have. He's got to nail some people. And, just as Al Capone went to prison for tax cheat activities, I don't care if he gets the Trump people on crooked real estate deals or anything else. That's all fair game. And we can sort out the pieces of the Russian investigation later on. Now, I do know them from having talked to members of Congress recently that they consider their responsibility in part now to prepare defenses against this so it doesn't happen in the future. And that's a much trickier and broader question about how do you preserve and defend the 2018 and 2020 elections, and how do you crack down on improper use of social media without suppressing free speech and without infringing on First Amendment rights of organizations like Facebook and Twitter and their members.
Well, but what we're just learning is that Robert Mueller obtained a FISA warrant and the FBI did raid Facebook and they took these Russian accounts. Recently, Facebook announced that they had uncovered all of these Russian accounts with fake Americans trying to influence the election and also trying to organize rallies in Idaho, etc. It's obvious to me that Facebook wasn't coming clean. They were forced to admit it because the FBI raided them.
Yeah, the Facebook story, I think, is just at the very early stages. I think we have a lot more to learn about that. Adam Schiff, a congressman from California who's on the House Intelligence Committee, said we just know the tip of the iceberg on this story. Facebook said that it shut down a few hundred accounts involving Russian operatives during the 2016 election. But we learned recently that in the French election, the French shut down 50,000 Russian accounts on Facebook. So the idea that this was limited to $100,000 worth of ads and a few hundred accounts, I think, is not credible. Facebook has not released, even to Senate and House investigators, the precise ads that were posted on Facebook. They have not identified to either the House or Senate Intelligence Committees the names of the Russians. The Russians created fake American-sounding names, you know, from places like West Virginia and Kansas, and made them pretend to be Americans while they were yapping on Facebook about how terrible Hillary Clinton was. So, and as you mentioned, organizing anti-immigration rallies, and so we just know the beginning of this story. Mueller, no doubt, can get more, but I think it's going to be like pulling teeth. You know, he can subpoena material from Facebook, but how do you know that you've got all of it? How do you get, you know, Facebook people to cooperate completely? And do the Facebook people even know? I don't know. I mean, they've got billions of members. They make a lot of money the more members they have. They don't want to scare people away. The same thing goes for Twitter. I think we've just begun to learn about that. I mean, Twitter isn't as careful as Facebook. You don't have to identify who you are. But some huge percentage, I've seen different numbers on this, but a huge percentage of Twitter users are fake. They're just bots. They're robots that spew out propaganda. And you can create dozens or hundreds or thousands of these with a few clicks of a mouse if you know what you're doing, and, you know, create trending topics on Twitter and do all kinds of things to foster conspiracy theories like the Pizzagate nonsense and other things that happened last year. So I think we're just beginning to learn the importance of the potential Russian involvement in both Facebook and Twitter.
Well, Robert Dreyfuss, I thank you very much for joining us here today. I appreciate it.
Thanks. Been my pleasure.
And again, I've been speaking with Robert Dreyfuss, who's a Nation contributing editor and an independent investigative journalist who specializes in politics and national security. He's the author of Devil's Game, How the United States Helped Unleash Fundamentalist Islam. And he has an article at Rolling Stone, Russiagate Dominoes Are Starting to Fall. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back looking at this last-ditch effort to repeal and replace Obamacare that may well be the worst Republican bill so far.